No title again? And I did not live the little money.
And it's rolling. Gee, is this a new podcast? I think it is. Really? Dixon Jeans 479, I guess. Holy shit, they're cranking up there. Listen, just before I came out, I'm in Thompson Park now. Just been listening to Norm Augustinus. Oh boy, that's one man I still want to meet. I really want to meet the Norm behind the podcast, the real in the flesh, fully clothed, of course, Norm. If I ever get to New York, I'm going to have to make some kind of arrangement. Norm, let's meet, let's go for a walk, let's have a coffee somewhere, and let's talk. I really want to know who you are. But let's put that aside. My time now, my time, and my time is getting limited because if this is number 479, that means we've only got 21 episodes left. And it is beginning to occur to me that, you know, when I feel this buildup, I gotta get out, I gotta talk, I gotta vent, I gotta let something out of me. When that day ends and I say, hey, no, sorry, dude, you promised 500 episodes, you can't go and record and put that out there anymore. You can record, but you're not allowed to release it, so what's the point of recording? No, can't do that. You gotta find a substitute, and that substitute better be the writing you keep talking about. I've been, on that note, I've been continuously coming up with beginnings, and for a good part of my life, I told you, I've got a suitcase full of beginnings, starts, efforts in the past of, okay, this is going to be it, and each one comes to a grinding halt because simply it's not good enough or it's stupid, and I just still keep coming up. They're coming out in my head. I had one last night. I just, you know, you'll wake up in the night and I'm, okay, this is the one. This is where I'm going to start. And again, it's that problem. Like, how much do I reveal? How much do I share now? Which just kind of makes me uneasy. Or is it just not better not to say anything at all? Just do it, you know. Don't make this transition. I guess maybe what I'm trying to do is allow myself a transition from the audio to the writing, from the podcast to the written word. And I guess you may have guessed by now, I'm thinking in terms of a serial. Like, it's not just, okay, I'm going to sit and write a book, and a year and a half, 2 years from now, okay, finished, come and get it, that any effort I make. It's just the way the newsletter was, the zine, you know, every 3 months it came out without fail, and then the podcast pretty well every week over a period of 10 years. There's no way that this story can't help but be the same. You know, it's going to be released in serial segments. That's just the way. It's the only way. And it's just exactly how that I'm still sort of working on and what sort of feedback I'm going to allow and what else is going to be linked to it. And, it's going to have some images as part of it, which would make it more entertaining. I guess what I want it to be, and I'm probably thinking more about, I almost said you the reader, and that's a big assumption that I would carry some of the Dixon Jeans listeners over to the Dixon Jeans thing, which is starting to sound more like a blog, which is kind of scary, but yeah, that might be how it might be perceived. Anyway, I'm just starting to think that I want you to be entertained, or whoever the readers are, I want them to be entertained. I want them to enjoy it. I want them to look forward to each new segment. So already it's starting to sound like, that's not a book, that's just a blog you're going to write. It just happened to be it'll have one continuous thread, and it won't be about social media. It'll just be using that. So I don't know. Oh, God. I've said too much already. I need to talk to a few people. I need to talk to my buddy Shane, who is the one who gave me a little bit of a push to get this going. And I need to talk to Janine, our former intern on that other podcast, the Gappage podcast we did. I need a little boost from her. I need support from some people. I need encouragement. Yesterday I was going through, there's a very interesting Facebook group called Lachine Then and Now, and you have to be invited to join it, and you pretty well have to be an ex-Lachiner. And they're controlling, so it's not commercial. It's just people posting up old pictures and photos and memories. You're seeing people's, you know, Meadowbrook School grade one photos and stuff. So I'm enjoying it, actually. And there's some very interesting, some people considerably older than me on it as well. And some very successful people, I think, really skilled artists and others. So it's a real mix. And anyway, a name came up yesterday, and I believe the name is John Beveridge. And it would have been somebody who was exactly my age, but he would have been 11B, which was the smart ones. A and B were the smart ones, and I was, as you know, down with F. So we just didn't hang out at all. You wouldn't hang out with the smart ones the same way, although a couple of my good friends, Barnacle Bill and Reginald, Glenn, who I talked about last week, his sister's here visiting, he was in the upper echelons. They just had better grades and were probably just a lot smarter than me. And we didn't become friends till we were in university. You know, in high school, you hung out with your peer group, really. Anyway, this John Beveridge, as people started talking about him, somebody said, I remember him being in my swimming club, and he was the best swimmer by far. And then somebody says, yeah, he was on our, maybe it was a baseball team, and he was fantastic. And then somebody says, oh, yeah, but he was a student council president in our year. And I keep thinking, yeah, okay, I think I knew that guy. And everything that everybody had to say about him was, wow, what an amazing boy. Because that's how they're remembering him, high school. Now, he died in his 50s of, what do you call that? yeah, I don't know. I can't remember. And I was kind of stunned by every single comment. And what an astounding athlete, what a kind person, what a generous and thoughtful, somebody who just gave himself fully to life. And was like a success from the time they were just a little kid on. And I think, wow, how far away from that was I? Like, who the hell was I? I guess, you know, the word loser is starting to slip out. Well, you know, was I a loser? I guess most of us were, or most of the people I hung out with maybe were to some degree. And the nerds, I wasn't on sports teams. I wasn't with the bright ones. I was popular enough. I don't know what I'm saying here. Maybe because I'm confused and I don't know who I was. I don't know who I am now and I don't know who I was then. And all of it's trying to piece together that people liked me. I had friends. I was a clown. That was my defense. Okay, you can't be this, you can't be that. Well, just be a clown. That's a safe route to go. But probably a bit of an asshole, too. Not intentionally mean. Not intentionally mean. I'll just leave it at that. But it just made me feel that G I keep talking about that I got given in grade 5 by Mr. Rogers, which incidentally was going to be the start of this book, because it really, I said at when we were at PAB conference, I think probably the last one I attended or spoke at, that it really did brand me for life. You're G, you're good. You're not very good, you're not excellent by a long shot, and you never will be, but you might be very good if you just try it a little harder, but you're G, and just be grateful you're not an F, a failure. Or fair, in those terms. You was unsatisfactory. Just, I mean, what a cruel thing to do to kids. Anybody got a U, it was just this mark. It was like branding somebody stupid, and, you know, nothing could fix you if you had a U on any grade. F was bad enough, my God. Hey, fair. What a stupid thing to call it. Fair. Tell it like it is. Hey, it's not good enough, buddy. Fair. You know, fair. It's passed, but the message is, hey, F also sounds like fail. And they didn't want to put fail, so they changed the L to an R. Fair. But Jesus Christ, if you go through school with F's, this is elementary school we're talking about. Back when I was in primary school in Valleyfield, they used to put stars, colored stars in your report card, blue and gold and silver, and you wanted those colored stars. I started off shining. I started off bright, but then it was a pretty small pond I was in, the Valleyfield Galt Institute, across the street from where we lived. I had a shining start, and then just fell apart in grade 4 when we moved. By the way, none of this is what I was going to talk about, and that's just as well. I had a whole list of things I want to talk about, but this is what's coming out instead, and this is when the Dixon Chains podcast is a little more authentic. Speaking of which, I may tack on at the end of this podcast a 20-minute clip from Chicago, because I was going to release it as a separate podcast in the travel series from this summer. Now I'm thinking, oh, it's just 20 minutes, just, I don't know. Well, it may be here, it may not. Doesn't matter. Sorry I brought it up. So back to the smart guys, the John Beveridges, and it made me feel last night like, who are you in your life? Really, you're nobody. You've succeeded in somehow, miraculously. You've succeeded. You got an amazingly wonderful, talented wife that you found and I almost said captured, in a way, brought back to Canada. We've raised two wonderful boys, still raising them. Just heard from number one son, who's just attending this amazing concert in Mexico, and in the middle of, if I can't come up with the names, it's no point, but in the middle of performance, bam, lightning, thunder, and they had to count some big name act, okay, sorry, big name act. He was really enjoying somebody I've never seen. The band, I guess this is a pretty well-known, well-advertised concert in Mexico City. And I'm kind of proud of the fact. Holy shit, yeah, my son, you know, one thing, going to the Montreal Forum to see the Stones, but this guy's flown to Mexico City to catch this amazing act. Jack White's performance had to be canceled because of the thunder, and they're hoping they'll see him tonight with whoever else. So I've got a lot to be proud of and a lot to be grateful for. It's Thanksgiving weekend, by the way, so I mean, I should be very thankful. So somehow, I used to think I was comfortable with that G, it just got me through life, and I guess I'm trying to say I still am, and yet maybe it's that I'm trying to be something more, I'm trying to be something better, and it's maybe tied to this idea of the book that this has to be something that I succeed at. It's as if I haven't succeeded at anything fully in my life. And I have to make something count now. And I think that's a ridiculous pressure to put on myself. And a very bad start for any creative project. And I don't know where it's coming from. It seems to be coming from within. Like, I want to be successful. And what the hell does that mean? I already am successful. Why am I putting this? And I hope this resonates with some of you out there who may have sort of similar feelings. I know I have some good listeners. I was just thinking of somebody in particular right now who tunes into this and listens and appreciates this. And I should have so much more of a good feeling that, holy shit, fuck you, man. Dixon Jeans has already been successful. 20 years as a zine that went out there and you just did it. And you got people involved and it was interactive, people writing in. And it lasted a full 20 years. And 10 years of this podcast. I should be proud of that, man. From the beginning, right in there, right in the early days, and just kept it going. And I've had a lot of good listeners, and I really mean that. It's not just I'm not sucking up to anybody. I am really proud of the listeners I have to this podcast. I feel, holy shit, man, you have really succeeded in attracting a lot of intelligent, interesting, thoughtful people with depth. And you who I know who interact with me from time to time. You're racing through my mind now, and I'm very, very proud to have you as listeners. Boy, I seem to be ranting, but I mean that, and I just can't. I want that point to come across. But I'm not just grateful, but it makes me feel, yes, hey, this has been successful enough. It's just that maybe I'm trying to apply some outside measurement to it. It's sort of like there's always been a sense of inadequacy, inferiority within me and my family as a whole. And I know it certainly was there with my father. Just not quite good enough or not quite fitting into that group or something. And why should we even care? But it's a thing, and maybe that's part of my mother's side, the British side, of being very sort of almost class conscious of, well, where do you fit in? You know, what is your relative ranking? So let's drop all that. I'm glad I got that out. I didn't know what I was going to say, but whatever it is I've said, I needed to. This might be a long clip, forgive me, and that's just the way it is. I hope some of you, by the way, have been enjoying the clips that I recorded on that trip with the Barstool Buddha this summer. I've had fun. I'm glad I recorded them. I've got to put them out there for what they are. Next topic. My wife gave me a haircut yesterday, and it's one of the real treats. There was a time when we had our first reunion. We had a reunion in 1988 in Nova Scotia, so I was only married in 87, 86? Yeah, 86. And we came back to spend a couple of years in Canada before returning to Japan. And on our first year, of course, we traveled across Europe, across Siberia, got to Vancouver, drove across from Vancouver to Ottawa to hook up my family, start a new life. And then the next summer, drove to Nova Scotia to be part of this 88 reunion up on the farm in Nova Scotia with the gang, the original, the Rock Fathers, and so on. And at that time, you know, my wife was new to everybody else there, and it was just sort of meeting Canada. I saw 9 out of 10 provinces, or 8 out of, 9 out of 10 in the first year she was back here. And gave me a haircut. And it was quite a thing, and I think quite a bit of it might be on video, because the fellow from Yellowknife brought a camera with him, that would be Rod. And lots of things got filmed. And it was really quite wonderful. That was when we were going to throw the Rock back into the Bay of Fundy, and decided not to. And it's always been a thing. She really does it well. And the funny thing is, she'll get those scissors into my ears and right up my nose and on the eyebrows, which as you get old, you know, they grow. Your eyebrows start to go crazy, take on a life of their own. You've seen it in pictures of Brezhnev and other people. Hey, somebody get the scissors and trim those bastards back. And what there's a humor with it. She's in control. She's in absolute control. We have a nice little electric shaver thing and the scissors and the comb, and she does an amazing job. My wife is skilled at everything she puts her mind to, and I'm not bragging. Hey, it's her, not me. It's just a fact. She's just a very, very talented woman. that's just the way it is. But the humor comes with, she's always telling me, you know, I'm always going, hey, be careful, it's my ear, and she'll bark at me in Japanese in a way that just breaks me up, because she'll just say, hey, you move again, and I'm going to hurt you, you know, don't move, shut up and do what I tell you, but all in Japanese, and it's a time of affection and warmth and love and care and happiness and joy. And so just yesterday I had another haircut, and again, the great job, and she'll just gets in there with the scissors and the electric bzz, 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 and she's, you know, she's very direct. Hey, you start getting old, you start getting ugly, you're not handsome anyway, at least you can be clean. You know, she's very blunt about it. and I do appreciate that. My family does keep me honest, and it's an honesty that sometimes I try to make myself sound good on this podcast, because I just can't bear the cruel reality of how things really are, what my real position is in life, which a family will make clear to you. Now, as she's doing this anyway, we got into the discussion, and I got into, for some reason, I was quite wrapped up yesterday in politics and things. 19 minutes. I'm really sorry, but this is going to be a long clip. Okay? So if you need a break now, hit the pause button now. Maybe I'll put it in a little interlude, okay? Okay, well, I'm getting a haircut. Buzz, buzz, buzz. Pause.
suoi sospiri. I palpiti sentì, confondere i miei con suoi sospiri. Cielo si può morir, di più non chiedo.
And we're back. Now, as I was saying, I'm in the middle of this haircut, and I start saying, okay, first of all, Canadian citizenship should be just that. You're a Canadian citizen. There is no such thing as dual citizenship. And she disagrees, and I say, no, it's just it. You're a dual citizen. You cannot have dual citizenship. You have loyalties to Canada, period. And I'm putting that out there, too, because this is my vision of Canada, and I know it's probably beginning to sound a little radical and a little fanatical and a little bit fascist, maybe. You give up. You can't be, you know, Lebanese and Canadian. You take a choice. Pick one. And that's what you've got. What else went with that? Yes, the allegiance. You're no longer pledging allegiance to the Queen. As much as I am a monarchist and dearly, dearly love my Queen Elizabeth, the act that you when you become a Canadian citizenship, your oath of loyalty is to the Queen of England and her descendants or her successors or whatever. No, I'm sorry. Your oath of loyalty is going to have to be to Canada. So we got to work on that. We got to rewrite that. But most importantly, and I've talked about on this podcast before, you owe everybody between the age of, let's say, 18 to 29, owes Canada, let's say, 18 months. Between a year and 2 years, 1 year minimum, 2 years max, unless you come back in a leadership position or something, of national service to the country. Everybody. And it could be, you could take a military option if you want and do training. You could do Coast Guard. You can go forest firefighting. You might have a couple of choices, but it's going to be outside your home province. Whatever is your home province or city, boom, you're going to be in another area. This is like Katimovic, the program that we used to have, that the Harper government cut. The bastards, because it was a liberal program. And Justin Trudeau, by the way, was the leader of it, so it was just deliberate fucking Harper. Anyway, you serve outside, and there are no, my point was there are no exceptions. French and English together, every new Canadian, you've come here and you don't even have English, well, you're going to learn it soon enough, and or French. You're going to work together. Now, it may have to be a volunteer program to start off before we can get the whole thing in motion, because otherwise it'll be a huge government boondoggle and it'll make a mess of it. You might even need to privatize it and contract it out, I don't know, to do this properly, because you just don't want a huge federal bureaucracy running this damn thing. At whatever the rate, there are no exceptions. And my wife's discussion as she's giving me the haircut, well, that's not fair. Not everybody. Some people have special talents, some artists or something. Or, for example, so her argument was the 3-year-old piano protege, piano violinist or whatever, that they spend their entire life studying, and you can't just take them away from that. And my argument, the socialist in me, and my wife is very much a capitalist, is that that's elitist. If somebody, you know, your average kid in the slums is not a piano protege at age 3. This is somebody who's got money to put their child through some private school and into these piano lessons, and that's exactly what I'm avoiding. You cannot buy your way out of this program. And my argument would be, okay, so this kid, fine, let them study from age 3, but when 18, it's time to do their service and they've got to pick their slot, you can do a music program. You can start up an orchestra. You can go up to Yellowknife and give kids their basic lessons in music. You can be in the field of education. There's many possibilities. It's not just boots marching, you know, in uniforms, although I think there will be a uniform involved in this. Yes, there will be, yes. Although it won't have anything to do with hair color or hair length or anything like that, or hijabs, that's fine. All that's good. But there will be a standard uniform. Because it's basically, it's about equality. We are all the same. New Canadians, old Canadians, rich Canadians, poor Canadians, French Canadians, English Canadians, non-English speaking, you know, whoever, all of you serve and give to Canada, and it'll be a tremendous time, and you will learn basic skills. You'll be boot camp, they'll be training, you'll be up early. You're going to have to go through probably a 1 month, you know, regimented, difficult training program. Physically handicapped, mentally handicapped will be involved. There'll be allowances made for you, and you know, and everybody is part of this. Health, I don't know, severe health conditions, all right, sorry, you know. We're not going to drag you out of a hospital bed. This is not going to be something that Pol Pot arranges. You know, nobody's going to be shot or tortured. But I feel so strongly about that. And I know it's ridiculous because it'll never happen because everybody knows, well, that's against the freedom and so on. But to me, this is needed. And there's room for the artists. You know, it isn't just, it's not everybody has to become a jock. No. You, if you're jock inclined, good. You'll teach sports to kids. You'll do the whole education component. You'll be organizing, planning. You will learn all kinds of skills. You'll be learning budgeting like you do in Katimovic. Okay, here's your money. You guys got to feed yourselves. You're going to go off in camps. Oh, I want this so badly. And again, it'll absolutely never, ever happen. But I guess the interesting thing was that there was just such a difference of opinion between my wife and I. And she thought, you know, I really do start to sound like a crazy person. And the more arguments I get, the more insistent I get that there are no exceptions and this must be. I also want to change the Canadian flag. By the way, you've already heard that. I want two blue stripes on it representing the, you could say, the French Canadians, if you want to put it that way. But just to make it look better, what a boring fucking flag we have. Red and white. You could not pick a more boring flag in the goddamn world. The type of the Japanese flag, but I like that one even better. You know, blue stripes on either end. Thank you. Representing 25% of the population, French Canadian. 1 2 years compulsory service. Oh, yeah, after which, of course, after you finish this time, you get a real break on your university education. You put in that time, you're going to have a small spending allowance and so on, but you're going to have either free or discounted education, post-secondary studies. You will get a real break from this benefit. It's just that I want the rich, the super rich. And this is my wife's point of view, is you are always targeting the rich. And tells me, I think that's part of your thing against them. That I grew up middle class, but we were frugal. We had to be. I had a comfortable life. I never suffered. So it's not like I hate the rich and want to down with the pigs. But I do have this sense of... I don't know. I call it equality, but it might sound more like vengeance. What does it add up to, all this reading? Oh, yeah, I guess the last point. All the reading that I'm doing, I'm doing so much, and I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the history. I told you all about Red Cloud that I read, and last night they had a movie, Cheyenne Autumn, which was one of John Ford's last pictures, when he finally realized that... In all his previous westerns, the Indians had just been these nameless guys on horses who were being shot by the good guys, the cavalry and the settlers and so on. And this one was to show the story, the true story about, was it Dull Knife? And I can't remember the other chief. True historic figures of the last of the Cheyenne, how they've been deprived of all their land as people came in and they wanted gold and the settlers wanted to take over the land. And they just kept being put more and more off to these reserves where they couldn't even feed themselves anymore. And the white man was hunting all the buffalo, which fed and nourished the Indians. And the white man only wanted it for the hides. That was all. So there was no food left. These people were starving and hungry, and they were coming back and saying, hey, we've got to get back to our land. And they were just dying of starvation and disease and sickness and neglect and false promises. And it was good that the story was told. It was a bit hokey, you know. They managed to weave in a love story between a soldier and a Quaker woman and so on. But it was just that this thing I have about history. I watched the first episode of the Civil War series, the PBS Civil War series last night, and I could not believe, my God, the fact that slavery was a way of life, and a way of life enough that the Southern states said, hey, we will secede from this country because we need slaves and these people will never be equal. And the North knowing, hey, this is, you know, all men are created equal. Oh, something's wrong here. And it's so hard to believe. Like, this is recent American history. This is just 1861 to 65. It's civil war over something as basic as keeping people in this unbelievably brutal condition, a supposedly Christian nation. My God. So that's also interesting. And then the night before, I watched Khartoum. Another story about General Gordon being, you know, finally being killed and his head held up on a spike by one of the new Muslim leaders at the time, who was the chosen one, the selected one, to come and unite the people and slaughter all the non-believers within this village of Khartoum. And of course, that just, you know. Yeah, but I'm not going to get into that because I did hear the very, very interesting thing on the clip on CNN where they played the man. I can't remember his name. I'm sorry. I'm without any facts today, or few anyway. Calling back Bill Maher for his criticism and his generalizations about Islam as a whole, and this was, hey, do not call out. And basically, it was a call out to them and to CNN of just terrible reporting and this blanket statements about a religion as a whole or the Muslim people or Muslim countries without differentiating between the two. Same way I get upset when people talk about Africa as one thing when it's just all these different countries. This was the same about Islam. And I watched it and I listened to it and I realized that, yeah, I got to be very careful. I don't make generalizations. My problem is, since becoming an atheist, I've become intolerant of all. And I don't care if they're the good Muslims or the bad Muslims. It's still a stupid religion. Okay? It's a religion. There is no God up there. And this idea of bowing down five times, yes, look after your fellow man and you know, treat the poor well and do all the good things, the social things that go that we should do as Christians, as humans, as anybody, but don't give me a hocus pocus about, you know, these holy books, the Quran, the Bible, fuck them both, okay? I'm sorry, but that just, oh boy, I guess I just sort of contradicted myself there, so much for my newfound tolerance. It's just any belief that's blind, and I know, I guess a lot of people would accuse me of the same. Here I am talking like a fascist about the country I want Canada to be. I mean, I really must be a nutcase. I'm very liberal, and I want the Liberal Party to bring this into make a motion towards this. And of course, absolutely no political party could ever do what I've just asked for, including changing the flag. And I guess it sounds an awful lot like intolerance, and it is. It's just, yeah, I guess it simply comes down to, I think, sorry, my way of thinking is right. I feel I'm a man of the future, and I feel an awful lot of people on this planet are people of the past, and my future man involves an awful, or is concerned with tolerance, liberation, free thought, free speech. I also, of course, goes without saying, legalize marijuana and prostitution. Those are the other things I need in my Canada. So I guess I've destroyed pretty well everything I set out to do, and I've given you this all big one lump dump. I hope And I appreciate if anybody thinks I have any kind of a sickness of a. And it's not. I'm not worried about having a twisted mind. We're all entitled to our own thoughts and opinions. But my wife, when we came home yesterday from a drive, I curse at drivers who make mistakes, and then I'll go and make a mistake. And she said, "You're just sometimes you're just not fun to be with. You're always complaining." And like I came home and the leaves weren't raked, and I told my son to rake the leaves, and I just and my wife said, "Well, I'll go tell him." I said, "No, never mind. I'll do it myself." You know, and storm into the garage and grab a rake and start bagging up leaves. And it must be that she, you know, she's just saying, "Are you in pain or something? Like, why are you grumpy like this?" And you, the Dixon James listeners, may not know me as a grumpy person. You may know me as a crazy person, but I should be a lot happier. I should be a lot more carefree. I should be light like a balloon, like a bubble. And I'm not. And I know sometimes I do really let what I feel is the state of the world bring me down. And I do really believe that flicking channels with my son beside me. They had Toddlers and Tiaras, you know, one of those shows. And I see it. And I said, "Kill them all." And of course, my wife quickly pointed out, you don't kill people because they want to put their little daughter on stage. But the mother is in the audience smacking her bum, teaching her child, smack your bum, look cute, shake your hips. And the kid is a toddler, like 2-3 years old. And to me, there is nothing sicker and more disgusting than this. And it's the downfall of American culture. I mean, this is, hey, look at yourself. What kind of women, how are these women, these mothers, bred? What do they have for brains? There can't be a brain in their head. That they've got to have their little daughters dressed up like tarts or cookies on some fucking stage to win a crown, to be better and cuter and sexier than the other little 3-year-old. This is disgusting. This is disgusting. And this is the state of the world. And that kind of thing, I can't let it go. I can't ignore it. I can't just say, well, that's just different strokes for different folks. No. And I guess this is what's wrong with me, is I feel that is just so wrong. And it's not that I want to hurt any of those people, but it's as if their brains have already been sucked out. It's already too late. The capitalist system that sells products, that makes people consume without thinking, is one, and we're too far gone. And it's as if every one of these people have become robotic. They don't have an original thought in their head. They're no longer alive. They are the walking dead. And that's just one example. But it's the same on television. It's the same, the new humor on new TV shows. Oh my God. And I know this sounds, it has to sound like the rantings and ravings of an old man who should have packed it in long ago. And it happens all the time. People get old and they just, oh, the world was better in the old days. And I'm not even saying it was better, but I'm saying take a look around you and it's sick now. Our values, Western culture is in serious decline, and I don't know that it can be saved. This is, you look at the gladiator fights, well, that's where we are now. That kind of sport. This idea of paying professional sports heroes $20, $30 million contracts to get out there and be stars, and if they fail, boo, you know, throw them to the lions. It's, everything seems wrong. And I know that's the sound of a sick man saying that everything seems wrong. Here it is, Thanksgiving weekend, when I'm in the sunshine in a park wearing wonderful warm clothes. Who knows where they were made? Comfortable shoes I can walk in, pair of jeans and a nice favorite corduroy shirt and a T-shirt from Dodge City and a wonderful little down vest my wife bought me at a reasonable price. And I'm going to go home and there's going to be good food and there's good beer in the fridge and good wine in my wine cellar that other humans have made and produced. and shipped and delivered, and it's not going to be poisonous, and nobody's going to die, and there's going to be a wonderful dinner, and oh, there's so much that's just so perfect about this specialization of this species of ant, which we are, that works, that miraculously, I see a car coming, I've got a car I'm going to hop in, I've got a digital thing I'm holding in my hand, this black piece of ceramic that I'm talking into right now, that I'll go home and I'll take out a little chip, or I'll just plug it into my computer and I'll upload it and it will go out on the internet and you'll be able to listen to this on your little portable device or your computer, and you say, holy shit, we've communicated at its most amazing, sophisticated level, when not long ago we were grunting in caves and holding big sticks. And this little stick I have in my hand is like a gift from God. This is magic. This is sorcery. This is just incredible, but it's man-made. And we've done it, and we're understanding diseases and sicknesses, and we're coping with them, and we're fixing them, and we've got surgeons and specialists and smart people and artists and painters and mechanics, poets, chefs, the list goes on. Wow! And on this same planet, in earlier times, there were dinosaurs, things without brains, barely functioning, roaming this planet, eating, procreating, and killing each other in horror and terror. And now we have this human species. Holy shit, what the fuck happened? Who planted that seed? Okay, I hope that doesn't sound fake, because I mean it genuinely. It's Thanksgiving, and this is my Thanksgiving podcast, and I am thankful for the friends I have, the family I have, the breaks I've been giving, the life I've lived, the life I've got right now, and the life I still have ahead of me. So, so much. And thank you, and I please each and every one of you, please take time and be grateful for all you have, all the blessings you've got. And somehow raise a smile and celebrate and cheer and forget all the crap that I sometimes deliver. It's just me having a much-needed dump. Thank you, one and all. Scarborough Dude. Phew! 40 minutes straight. Holy shit, that was a record. Signing out. Bye for now.
Other keeps it moving on and on, and there is no excuse for us being late for all of the jobs that we hate. Let us do what we really want. It is not a question of time or place. This is not a race, but we all refuse to slow down. And maybe it's the fact that we all have taste in this cut and paste world. We never hit the ground yet. Cooler, cooler, cool with my walk. Every day I play my practice to get ahead of the pack, and every day I give myself a smack to keep myself from looking back. I will correct until it is effective. And you're feeling like you got something you gotta prove, and you don't think you can stand another day. Your neck is getting sore from trying to follow the groove, but you know that deep inside you got a debt you gotta pay. Spinning like a CD and skipping like a cheap trick record.
listen to it the next day. You may listen to it a week down the line. And part that I absolutely love about podcasting, which is, don't get me wrong, it's not like a grand epiphany or anything, but just like the aspect of podcasting that I love, that I locked onto last year, was just the timelessness of it. That every single episode is brand new to the person that comes to your site for the first time.
Okay, I'm going to leave it there.
That I recorded 5 years ago.
Thank you, Anthony.
Brand new.
Anthony Marco, and he just he inspired me to talk. So here's Anthony. This is another interesting thing about podcasting. Anthony struggling to find his topic and saying, "I'm just allow me to talk through this, and I'll get to wherever it is I have to get to. I just don't know what I'm going to say." And he talked about it being his podcast, and this one, I would say for sure, are more about process than product. It's the doing that's important, and that's the wonderful thing about the Dixon James podcast. For me, you're not worried about the end result so much. After you've finished and I've slapped it all together and I've put it out there and released it to the wilds, I generally feel good. I think, you know, I've used my voice. I've added in music that I think will catch the listener's interest. And I'm satisfied with the end product at the end. But while I'm doing it, I'm not thinking about product. It's the process. And if that results in a decent product, that's fine. But the emphasis and the focus is on the doing. And I think this is what's got me hung up about this book project. I'm focusing on the product and not the process entirely. And wow, this is a bit of a revelation here. I mean, it's probably obvious to you, but it's just came home with a little bit of clarity today, just thanks to Anthony Marco struggling to come up with what it is he's going to be talking about today, and reminding me that we should focus on process. And I think that's what I'm trying to get to, is if I'm going to write these stories, this story, this book, I can't call it a book anymore. I've been using that term, and we think of a book as something that's, you know, a number of pages put together, numbered, and so on, and I'm not really thinking in those terms. I think the end result, whatever I have, could be, hopefully, put into a book, but I think it'll be more process, and oh my God, I mean, if the Dixon Jane zine went on for 20 years, and the podcast went on for 10 years, this book thingy could go on for 5 years. It may take that long, and I'm okay with that. You know, let's say four. You know, two to get warmed up. Anyway, we'll see. But I think if I can just get my mind to think more about the doing rather than the end result, I'll be a lot happier and release what will turn out to be a better product, too. Now, I am driving. I'm along the 401. It's 11 in the morning, and I've just dropped my wife off at the airport. Give her a big hug and a kiss. Told her I loved her, and apologized for being such a lousy husband. And her response was, "Daijobu, jikanaru," which translated means, "That's okay, there's still time." And it's a wonderful answer. And for somebody who, you know, I think I've sort of, if I haven't said so directly, I've certainly hinted on this podcast throughout it, there's some rough years, even within the span of this 10-year podcast, when it looked like we were heading down the divorce road. And I'm just happy to say that we're not. It's hard letting somebody go just to get in there, wheel in her suitcase. She's only gone for 10 days. It's not long. My son and I won't starve to death. She's already left curry rice and instructions and things for us. And was leaving with quite a bit of trepidation herself, just to get back. But
my instructions. Please, please, please enjoy it. Treat yourself. Have some wonderful food. What's nice is that 2 days from now, my son will fly out and join her. And they'll get to travel a little bit together and do sightseeing and do things. And I think that's kind of fun that he can get to Japan with his mother, you know, her native country, and travel around together and practice his Japanese. So, I don't know what I'm saying other than it was a very touching moment. And lately, I don't know if it's come up or... I don't know if you've picked up on it, but I've been really down on myself a lot lately. I'm not entirely sure why. Is that too much noise outside here? I can close the window. Feelings of... It's not inadequacy and it's not inferiority, although it might appear to be those things. Just a lot of... And it's not exactly self-doubt either. But it's seeing myself in a not very nice light. Like, I'm not a very nice guy. And I know I keep coming back to this, and people listen to this, and they, well, gee, I think you're a nice guy. People who've met me enjoy my company. And I guess there's a feeling, yeah, but that's not, you only see the part of me I want you to see. So I don't know where I've got this. It almost appears to be guilt. And I have done some things in my life, many things in my life that I'm not proud of. I won't even, would never even confess on this podcast, as much as I like to say it's all about honesty. You can be honest, and I'm telling you the honest truth. Fuck you, I'm not telling you all the things that I feel lousy about. But, I mean... That doesn't make it any less authentic, but we authentically, you know, have to draw lines. Anyway, I don't know. I guess this is, I'm starting to trip over my own words. This is getting clumsy and awkward. You know what I think I better do is just simply get back to Anthony Marco and listen to him talk his way through whatever it is he was doing. Okay? So,
at that moment.
Scarborough Dude, signing off.
And that's just such a fantastic thing, isn't it? Because there's so many aspects of what we do in our everyday lives that don't get recorded. And people say, well, let's record this for posterity. I guess that's kind of what this is all about, but to me, that's just become such a diminutive statement. Like, it's almost like, let's just record it for the sake of recording it. Not so much about that. I think that this is intentionally a creative process. I'm not just recording for posterity. I'm recording to communicate.
I'm recording
so
to communicate.
So it's not just for the purposes of archiving. I mean, technically, if I wanted to do that, I could easily do that. And I could just say what I want.
People! feel it so slashed and torn.
Pressure.